Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Getting Hammered. I'm your host, Mary Catherine Hamm. I'm here with my co-host, Vic Mattis. We are your morning show for any hour. We've got a lot going on. Some Trump money and legal troubles once again. Something's going on down in Haiti, and I think Vic's going to explain it. SCOTUS has another interesting ruling, this time on the border in Texas. A crazy story from the New York Times about how to quell your climate anxiety, which I know our audience can use. And maybe a Kate Middleton update, because we need one of those. But before we get to any of that, how are you doing, Vic? We're prepping for Easter over here. We're coming into the weekend.
Yeah, are we? Is it happening?
It's happening soonish. Soonish.
I should mention I'm not here next Thursday. Oh, no. I just realized that.
Your Maundy Thursday break?
Yeah, Maundy. Is that a Protestant thing, Maundy? And who is Maundy?
Look.
Are you in a Monday? Is Monday a mood? I don't know. I'm Catholic. I don't know what Monday is.
I must confess that I looked up Monday.
You did.
In like the last couple months,
okay,
and again
forgot
what it means.
What it is.
Correct. It's the ceremonial washing of the feet.
Oh, the washing of the feet. Of course. Okay. Of course. It's like the longest.
I knew that. You can cut out the part where I didn't know that.
It's for Catholics, it's known as the longest mass of all time.
Oh, okay. And that's what you guys call it?
Yeah. In a very uplifting and solemn way. That's true. No, it's we have a weird schedule with the kids where, you know, one kid has next week off and the other kid has the following week off. So the only thing they might have in common is Thursday, Friday and Monday. So we're just going to go down to we're actually going to Charleston. So just to let you
That'll
know
be so fun.
Where I will be. I just realized that now.
I think I
love Charleston.
I think I can let you on the hook. I'll just off the hook. I'm going to say it on the fly. But I would like to interview Tim Carney about his new book.
Oh, it's a great book.
Family Unfriendly, so we can just grab him and you can enjoy your vacation.
Oh, no, Tim is
and your long mask.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, I'm looking forward to eating a lot of seafood, particularly on Friday, although it's a fasting day. But, you know, one meal, it'll be big. You know what they say? It's like
violating the spirit of the fast.
According to the church rules, it's, you know, the two other meals cannot equal the third meal. So you can have a snack, and then you have a big meal.
I see.
But what if your third meal is humongous? That's the thing. Be careful. But I am going to Husk, which is a fantastic.
Oh, shut up.
That is a good place.
This is off-brand for me. Fancy restaurant in the South that I have not been to.
Wow. Okay?
I haven't been to Husk. I believe maybe my husband has been, and I have not. And he's not the foodie. I'm the more foodier. That's right.
I might have spoken about this on the last show. I went there already once with Kate, but we're bringing the whole family. And last time I got shrimp and grits, which were out of control.
Oh, I bet.
But this time I really am going to get the fried chicken and waffles.
As you should. That sounds
great. As I should. So I also wanted to wish you happy, and wish all of us, our listeners, a happy National Down Syndrome Day. As we saw Rachel Campos Duffy brought her daughter onto the set. I have a niece, Juliana, who also has Down syndrome. So they tell you to wear mismatched socks is a thing, which is kind of cute. I actually forgot and wore the same pair.
Oh,
so,
boo.
But you know what? They can pair socks too. So, you know, you know, I get it's cute. But in any event, one other thing for you. We got a little bit pushback from one of our listeners, someone named Hugh Hewitt, about the Safeway lemons and throwing shade on the Safeway lemons. And the fact is, we're in this time of year where it is amazing that we get fresh tropical produce.
No, indeed.
All year round. Now they just happen to be coming from like South America now, Chile or Costa Rica or wherever. The avocados are from Mexico, the Haas avocados, right? But there was a time where you had to shop seasonally. And so you would have your weird root vegetables in the fall.
Yes.
And then, you know, / winter. And then spring, you begin to get things like asparagus, right? And then all of a sudden summer, then it's the abundance. I was reminded, so it's just not as good. I was reminded of a friend of mine, John Sidelides, who years ago used to work for Altamato. He's from Astoria, Queens.
Okay.
So I seen him sometime last year. We got together and he lives in town now. And he said, oh, you know, it's like in the fall. He says, I gotta go get my tomatoes now, he says, because they're still red.
Right.
I don't want them later in the winter. You know, you can get them, but they're not red. They're like pink balls. And he goes, I don't want the pink balls, is what he said. I don't want the pink balls.
Okay. A famous quote.
Mary Catherine, how are you?
I'm good. I would like to say that, yes, indeed, Safeway lemons from around the world are a marker of our great prosperity.
Yeah.
and the wonderful things that capitalism brings us. However, we can also recognize that although the lemons at Safeway and the Parmesan at Safeway are signs of that prosperity, that if my friend Kelly grows lemons on a farm, or if she makes me Parmesan from her fresh goat's milk, that those things might be a step up. So that's what happened in Israel. Is I was getting them straight off the
tree. You're getting straight out, yeah.
Straight off the tree.
From the tree.
Harvested right there. Anyway, okay.
Delightful.
What's going on with me is that I am obsessing over my children's Easter clothes because I like for everyone to... I like for this to be one of the occasions on which we get a decent photograph.
You talk about this all the time, about the coordinating, because you do, obviously Halloween is a big coordinate. Your family.
Yes.
Your family gets bigger and bigger, so the task gets harder and harder.
It does indeed.
Easter, are we talking about similar colors, hats?
So I do like to do, usually it's similar colors. So last year we had a pink and blue theme.
Right.
And everybody had
something. But not completely identical
matching.
But
not matchy-matchy. No, we don't want to do that. Let's go. We want to just go coordinate.
Yeah.
Okay? This year, I'm not trying as hard. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was like, I got a new baby. We got to get this picture of all of us. And we did, by the way. We got two decent pictures of all of us. The thing I forgot last Easter in my postpartum haze was shoes for the baby. So he was barefoot, which is fine.
He's not walking anywhere.
He doesn't need to walk, but... For the picture's sake, it would have been cute to have some shoes. So this year I solved that problem and I got him yesterday.
Little feet are cute. Little feet are cute.
Yesterday I got him little Sperry like boat shoes. And they have, hold on.
I'm
they
doing
have,
this where you can't see it unless you're watching that YouTube. Woo, with my
and
wrist.
They have,
Ooh.
The best part is that they have laces on the top, but the laces are just attached to a Velcro strip. So they're fake laces. It's so amazing. They look great on him. He looks like he's about to take his dad's yacht out for a joyride. It's fantastic. We don't have a yacht. Sorry, Dad.
And he can wear these shoes for the next maybe month.
Exactly. Yes. So we'll
save them for somebody.
They're going to get I already promised them. Hand me down to Guy Benson's son because Guy Benson loves a boat shoe. So they're going to him. Not a lot of wear and tear on the 1 year old's shoes. Both of these babies, by the way, of course, when I had my first two, I was putting them in all sorts of foo-foo stuff all the time with ridiculous boots and they couldn't even walk.
Yeah.
With these two babies, because I'm old and tired, they get a pair of shoes by the time they can walk. And that's pretty much the first time they've had them on their feet. So last year, when the toddler wore shoes for the first time around 1 year old, basically, she's like, what are we doing here? I don't understand these.
She likes to be barefoot.
He has a little more practice. We have gotten him in one pair of shoes before now, so he should be okay. So we did that. I'm looking all over for dresses. This year we're just going to do crazy Easter colors. I'm letting the boys...
Pastels?
Yes. Well, I'm letting the boys be a little bit more subdued.
Good.
Okay. So because Dad went pink and blue with us last year, and he doesn't mind. He likes to go... all out.
Well,
doesn't bother him.
He could pull off wearing anything. You know, when you're in great physical shape, everything looks good on you.
So this year, the baby has a little sweater vest with it's navy blue and light blue with some bunnies and carrots on it. So Dad's going to have a navy polo, and I'm going to put a little carrot applique where the
instead of the polo symbol
where the polo would be. So that's gonna see. I'm going easy on Dad.
That's a compromise.
The toddler has all the Easter egg colors and a little applique of bunnies on her dress. So the rest of us gals are just gonna be different Easter egg colors. So we got a yellow Easter egg. Mm-hmm. We got a pink girl, and I'm gonna be probably green or blue.
If I were there, I would have gone as the Ukrainian Easter egg.
just everything everywhere.
Much like the shirt.
My daughter dressed as she's a Fabergé egg. That's what we dress her. Anyway, so it's not quite as coordinated as last year. I'm going easy on folks. And of course, I love a bargain, so I'm shopping around.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I got to say, the moms out there will understand this. Also, maybe dads, if you do shopping for your kids. I don't want to be too gender normative. The 8 to 11 zone for young ladies... dead zone for cute dressy clothes, because it's hard to find something that's not too babyish, right?
Right.
An Easter dress that's I'm a 4 year old. You don't want to put that on your 10 year old. But then the cool clothes are all super casual or very expensive.
Right.
So my cheap ass is having some trouble
she's
finding something
in that in between.
Yeah,
I don't buy
dressy, reasonably priced,
right.
Cute for a 10-year-old.
Right.
If you have ideas, let me know.
I don't buy clothes for my kids.
Yeah, most dudes don't.
And plus, there's different measurement numbers for kids' numbers and adult. I don't know what's happening.
I do think there's
you're an
a
adult
lot,
small or you're a kid large.
There are many things that are easier when you have more children. Mm-hmm. Sorting clothes is not one of them. Like, it's just a constant churn through those clothes. And, you know, mama's at Goodwill resupplying, so it's not like I'm spending a ton of money. But
you do that thing.
But we do the maintenance of those clothes and working through them and figuring out what does and does not fit. It is at least quarterly job.
But then at some point, then you have to make that decision. You're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you'll make that decision of donating yourself, donating clothes. And Kate will go through this where she goes, oh, it's time. And then, oh, I remember this one.
Oh, my gosh.
Look,
yes.
Smell it. It smells so good.
I got a bin of them in storage.
Save a couple, okay? Yes. I get it. Save the ones from the pictures that you remember.
I know.
But the rest of it.
I'm trying to be disciplined about it. And over the years, every time you open the box, you'll be like, why did I save this one? And you can get rid of more of them. But it's trouble.
My
it's
late
hard.
Uncle gave my son years ago when he was little a set of shirts. And I don't know where he found them. They were like the coolest shirts. It was he got them up in Jersey.
Yeah.
And one of them, it was like this gorilla and it said rocket on it for some reason.
I mean,
and
that then sounds awesome.
Another one. Yes. And the other one was Secaucus Bowl. You know, Secaucus, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Secaucus Bowl, like bowling. And I'm like, that.
Yeah. I got to look at that's home and see shirt. I bet my mom has some old like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle originals.
Yeah, there you go.
That the baby could wear. I gotta get on that. All right, so should we move on to the actual news?
Yes.
I guess.
I mean, it's fun.
Guess. Let's talk a little 2024. And by that, of course, I mean Trump's legal woes.
Yes.
It's either, that's the story for the rest of the year. Trump's legal woes, Biden's unpopularity. So that's what we're going to do. Although it must be said both of them are unpopular. Trump is now facing the task of attempting to pay the fine in the New York civil judgment in order to appeal the
That's
New York
exactly
civil
right.
judgment, correct?
That's right. If you have rights, you have a right to appeal. You can say, hey, you don't think, you know, but most people, you know, we do as Americans, we have a right to appeal, but you just need to pay up $454 million.
Oh, that seems simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I understand the rules are different for civil versus criminal, but, like, again, everyone's just so gleeful about the promises they made to drag this person no matter what the crime, and then the making good on the promises to drag this person no matter the crime, while even the New York Times and the AP concede that no one has been punished under these statutes in this way before.
It is an unprecedented fine and an unprecedented decision. Because, again, he is being found guilty. In the words of Judge Engoron, right, who is, of course, openly,
and this is the property
anti-Trump
case, right?
This is the property case. This is about the overvaluation of his properties, where in order for him to secure loans from banks, two words, the two phrases that came out from Engoron's decision. One was Trump's, quote, desire for personal profit. Oh, God forbid you'd want that. We shouldn't. You know, when you sell your house, you think to yourself, I hope I only get as much as I paid for it. I don't want more.
Yeah.
And then the other one was,
or else you go to court.
Yes. And the other one regarding the amount of money that they had that Trump has to fork over, right? $454 million. Engoron called it his ill-gotten gains. Who filed this complaint? Did the banks file this complaint? Yeah. No, because there
were victims of fraud.
Nobody was complaining.
File this? Yeah.
There were no victims. The banks were paid back and the banks made money off of this. There are three things that are at play here. One, they're bandying about the possibility that the Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, can seize properties that add up to the $454 million. Trump would like to secure that money. They want cash. They don't want properties per se. He can't do that himself.
Right.
But no insurance company wants to help him. They're all afraid of Letitia James. Anyone that they're going to be, you know, the scrutiny that is going to be directed at these companies, anyone who helps Trump.
Right.
So they're not able to do that for him. It's a huge risk.
Well, and it also must be said that he doesn't always pay back his debts.
No.
So perhaps they are concerned about that as well.
It's a fair point. Barring that, And it is funny, earlier today I was watching on CNN, they had one of their commentators on, former state representative from South Carolina, and he was asked, people are saying that if Letitia James seizes property, Trump's lawyers are saying this would be seen as overly political, you know, the political overtones. And
then it would start. Okay.
And the commentator said, no, I don't think this is political at all.
Oh.
I mean, they really don't see it that way. They think this is what we're going to do. And we're just going to take it from Trump Tower. Trump Tower will be ours. You know, like at the end of that book, The Jungle, you know, Chicago will be ours.
Can I applaud AP real quick? Not for their coverage of this, although they did do that one story about how this has been used in the past, which was appreciated just for the headline. Lawyers, Trump and money. Ex-president spends millions in donor cash on attorneys as legal woes grow. I just appreciate the Zeon shout out. Thank you, guys. Good job.
So, you know, on the one hand, they're talking about how Biden and the Democrats have raised, you know, record sums for the Biden-Harris campaign. And juxtaposing that with Trump is in deep legal problem. He's running out of money. And, you know, one of the things he might have to do is declare bankruptcy in order to get out of paying $454 million. But a presidential candidate having to declare bankruptcy obviously is not a good look. On the one hand, I have seen people go after Trump saying that he is, you know, this billionaire candidate who wants to buy his way. And on the other hand, he doesn't have billions.
Money. I know. It's again, Calvin Ball. It's like, it makes it fun to laugh at him for having no money, but also they're like, he's a billionaire. It always cuts many ways. But yeah, this does seem like a little bit of a problem on the trail, because what you're not spending money on is Senate races and infrastructure.
Right.
I will say, I saw a tweet that was along the lines of, if he has to pay all this money and he's unable to do it and someone else helps him, he becomes a national security risk because he's broke. And it's like, okay, well, then you could just let him appeal. And then he's not a national security risk if he becomes the president.
I don't think they want him to appeal.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
There is a way out of this.
What's the way out?
Is the Eighth Amendment, right? Trump's lawyers are citing the Eighth Amendment, which states in part, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed. This is excessive.
It seems excessive.
Letitia James and George Engeron, I mean, they don't obviously feel this way. And they brought in one, you know, financial analyst. I like to say actuarial, but that's probably not what they are.
Right.
I just like the word actuarial. But they bring in a financial analyst who came in and did his, you know, the totaling of the amount of interest that and that Trump benefited from illegally. And that's how they somehow came up with this number from one person's estimate. Again, once you leave New York and appeal this, something tells me that they would also decide this is really excessive for something that a lot of people do, a lot of businesses do.
Right.
The only difference is they're not running against, you know.
And I just think, as usual, it's this cry of, well, no one's above the law, except you're using the law in new and novel ways on this one person for the reason that he is who he is.
Right.
And that is actually norm busting above the law. Not good behavior.
And this is not like we don't want to defend Trump if we don't have to. But here we are because they're putting us in this situation.
How it always
goes.
We're just
pointing out between this and the Alvin Bragg case about the hush money. And then suddenly there's a document dump of thousands of pages. So now they've postponed the Alvin Bragg case. There's a big question here of due process and whether or not Trump's getting it. And I just don't love him, hate him. Due process is afforded everybody.
That is important. Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like it.
Oh, shall we go to Haiti?
Yeah, still
a lot of sunny news today.
More uplifting news.
What the heck is happening in
Haiti? Well, everything is falling apart.
Guy who went to the Foreign Service.
Yes. I can tell you. I was at Georgetown when Jean-Bertrand Aristide came to Haiti.
He knows what he's talking about because he can say it.
I can say it in the accent, which is, it's a French Creole, really. Mm-hmm. French Creole. They don't really speak French Creole. Haiti is a mess. Haiti has always been a mess for a very long time. If you want to go back to, I'll put it to you this way. When I was in like eighth grade, I remember having to do a social studies report. And I did mine on Haiti because the leaders of Haiti had been toppled. It was Papa Doc. It was the Duvalier family. And it was Papa Doc. And then it was Baby Doc Duvalier who got overthrown and he fled to France.
Right.
And then came back sometime later to Haiti. And they were terrible dictators. They were anti-communist, you know, the 80s.
Right, right.
They were anti-communist, but...
They had that mark in their column.
They did. They did. So they did get help from the United States, but terrible dictators, political assassinations, you know, I mean, corruption. The corruption was out of control. So finally, people said enough is enough, and they bring in... By the time they got to the 90s, then it was Aristide, and he was like a former priest, a Salesian right. priest or something. And everyone's like, oh, this is our future. Never mind the fact that there were thugs who worked for Aristide who engaged in a terror tactic, a torture tactic known as necklacing. Ooh. Do you know what this is? It involves putting a tire on somebody's head, and I'll just leave it at that. I know kids listening to this. Yeah. Look it up if you want to know what happens. It's awful, and yet we thought he was the answer. Of course, Aristide was not the answer, and it has just been continuing this downward spiral of corruptions and murder and mayhem. And of course, on top of that, natural disasters
right,
and catastrophes.
Which doesn't help, right.
You have hurricanes, you have earthquakes. And so finally, the current last government finally fell apart, and Port-au-Prince and the country in general has descended into violence and basically civil war. A lot of murdering going on, gangs.
Yeah.
In particularly, there seems to be a head honcho now in Haiti, and mm-hmm. he goes by the name of Barbecue. Now, Barbecue.
I had a friend in high school who went by Barbecue, but it's just because he got stoned and would eat barbecue. That was the only reason.
Okay. I don't know why.
I have a feeling this guy's reason is more sinister.
Yeah, I'm really afraid to find out.
I wonder if that guy goes by Barbecue as a grown adult. Anyway.
Oh, your classmate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So this fellow is a former police officer, but he now runs a federation of criminal gangs. That sounds insane. But this is where we are. And while this has happened, of course, people are trying to flee the country,
right.
but including criminals trying to flee. Everyone's right. trying to flee the country. The problem is it's further away, obviously, than Cuba. It's like right. 700 miles. So it's a perilous journey. And yet already Ron DeSantis and Florida officials, Border Patrol officials, they're already detaining and finding and having to turn around Haitians attempting to get into the country.
Right.
So we're talking about a huge refugee crisis. Now, as I'm sure our listeners know, Haiti is also, it's on the island of Hispaniola. So it shares, they're on the western end and the eastern end is the DR.
Right.
Which has a lot of resorts, but it's also kind of a poor country.
Right.
They're trying to get into the Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic actually has a border and walls and gates. And they, as soon as people are coming in, they are turning them around and like instant deportation.
It's strange
deportation.
How other countries act differently on these issues than we do.
And the DR knows that they don't have the resources to deal with this. And on top of that, you have Americans who are there. Many of them, of course, are missionaries. I know a priest who I just met in person just, I believe, last month. And he's on the border. He's on the Dominican Republic side. And it's tough. And it's tough inland, you know, and you're dealing with this. And I can't imagine what he's dealing with right now in his parish and having to deal, you know, with this crisis going on. But we have Americans there. But it's unclear to me what the current administration is doing to get those Americans out.
I don't think they know what they're doing. So it's worth, so there's two issues. One, there are people, or there's three issues, I guess. There are people who are refugees from Haiti fleeing very scary stuff, and we should have compassion for that and for them. Then there are some really scary people who will use this to seek refuge in the U.S. or the Dominican Republic, which can be dangerous for everybody, particularly if you're not having a vetting system, which this particular administration is not famous for. And then you have Americans who are in Haiti. Now, the U.S. government has said they're not really doing evacuation efforts.
They warned them.
Yeah. Now, they've said, as they did in Afghanistan, a similar line, which is, look, the line's open. Call us if you're interested in information on how to get out of Haiti. It's such an insane message. Like, because I'm sure that, like, cell coverage and, like, Orbitz.com are working very well in Haiti right now if you need to book a flight out or like you have no idea, as in Afghanistan, if you can get to the major airport where you need to be. And so just like Afghanistan, people have taken this upon themselves to get out. Civilians have taken it upon themselves. And then there's Corey Mills, who's a former 82nd Airborne Army vet who's in Congress now. And he's been down there, as he was in Afghanistan as well, I believe, and in various places, getting Americans out of dangerous places, because apparently our government doesn't do that anymore.
He is He has successfully gotten out over a dozen, I think, Americans so far.
It says, let's see, over the weekend, his team brought home another 13, making it a total of 23. Wow. Here he is talking on Fox about some of these efforts.
Well, there wasn't a plan. Look, you just talked about 2021, no strategic plan whatsoever. You know, let's go to Israel, where I pulled out and rescued over 255 Americans. No strategic plan or rescue. We had to shame Biden into doing his job to send one aircraft when other nations had already done it. Now, fast forward, we're sitting here looking at Haiti, where we knew that the situation was deteriorating. We knew that Jimmy Chavier and the gangs from G9, as well as from Menken Khan and all the others, were coming together. We knew that the government had already fled and was staying in Puerto Rico, where the prime minister was residing before his resignation. So it's sad that, again, you've had Jake Sullivan and others, and Miller has say they don't have any plans whatsoever to evacuate. You've got this deputy spokesman saying it's their top priority for the safety and security, but it's not. It is not their top priority. If it was, they would have actually have been starting flights out of Cap-Haitien. They would have actually have started commissioning and getting people over there to try and start doing HELO operations and coordination with whether it be Provo over in Provencal, whether it be with the DR, whether it be with other areas. The bottom line is that Biden administration has a pattern of abandonment. They care more about trying to go ahead and save political optics than save American lives. And I'm just simply not going to stand for that. If he's not going to do his job, I'll do it for him.
It's wild. This is I have to say, this is a cultural shift from anything I've ever known in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. Now, to be sure, the American government's record is not perfect on this, but there was a sense if you were overseas and you were stuck in a bad situation, that the U.S. government and your passport and your consulate and your embassy would be very dedicated to finding a way to get you out. And that is no longer the case. As he says, like, they'll claim this is a top priority, but your actions show this is not a top priority.
Right. I also feel that, I don't know, if this were a Republican administration, the media would be on to them.
Yeah, you
much
think,
tougher about
and apparently
what are you doing to get them out?
There are more than a dozen, apparently, who are hostages of one of these gangs. Those are Americans.
No.
I know that we don't talk about American hostages anymore, either in Gaza or in Haiti, but
they're there.
Sullivan's like, we're talking to governments and we're talking to people on the ground. It's like, I don't get the feeling y'all are working real hard on this. By the way, DeSantis is again filling a gap by sending flights to Florida to pick up Americans.
Yeah.
So that's two people in government who are just Republicans who have put together that people need help, who do not have the full weight of the federal government behind them, sending resources and coordinating to get people out. The governor, speaking at a press conference in Central Florida, predicted many flights would follow a Wednesday transport, which included children among the 14 passengers. We are willing to dedicate the resources. We understand this is important. We understand that there's people that are really in danger right now that are our fellow Floridians.
Well, I mean, he did this in Israel.
Yep. Sure is an effective leader. Seems like somebody you might want to nominate for the presidency.
Yeah. No. Why would you do that? Okay, two things. One is Corey Mills mentions this guy, Jimmy Chevalier. I'll get his name wrong, but it's like Chevalier or something. That's barbecue. That's who he's talking about. But he's referring to him by his real name.
Well,
I go by the code name, his moniker. The other thing is, I do question the motives of Corey Mills for doing this. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, yes, it's great. He's a congressman. He wants to help them. This is what he do. On the other hand, I have a feeling that a year from now, we're going to be watching on Amazon Prime Extraction 3, the Corey Mills story. I think that's what it's going to be.
You know what? Is there a Pineapple Express story yet from the Pineapple Express 2, not the original Stoner
one.
Oh, yeah,
I remember the first one.
Remember they named the operations by civilians and vets to get people out of Afghanistan, Pineapple Express.
Oh, I forgot.
And has there been a movie about that yet? I know there is at least one movie about attempts to get an interpreter
it's an amazing
out of Afghanistan. Yep. And speaking of which, I do want to play General Mark Milley, who spoke in front of the House about the Afghanistan withdrawal disaster. And we'll play the clip and then we'll talk about it.
Are they in jail, dead, some of them?
I think some were killed. Afghans. I don't know about the Americans. I don't think the Americans were. But I think some of the Afghans were tracked down that worked with us. And I think some of them were killed, and I'm pretty certain some of them in pretty brutal ways. Some were managed to escape through various means.
Okay. First of all, there's the uncertainty about the Americans.
Down.
I don't think the Americans. Like, maybe you should look into that before you answer in front of Congress. Two, General Mark Milley, you were in charge.
Yeah.
At this time, it's just talking about it
Lloyd
as if
Austin. It's a, it,
yeah.
Third
as
person.
If he had as if he had nothing to do with this. He was in charge of this
on his watch
withdrawal. Well, as Biden. Was Biden.
So he was in a suit. He was no longer in uniform. Was that because Biden fired him?
He's retired now, so I guess that's
so okay.
I don't think he. I think he left with all the laurels and no firing.
Even Clinton took so much flack for the Black Hawk Down.
Yeah, no
disaster. Ended up forcing Les Aspin to step down as Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, nobody's been punished for the Afghanistan withdrawal at all, and they continue to say that it was successful.
Oh, yeah.
And they continue to say, in addition to being successful in their lovely, again, Calvin Ball way, it not only was successful, but it was also, if it wasn't, it was Trump's fault.
So, oh, right, in case.
And it's like, look, anything where civilians are hanging from the wings of planes as they take off from an American
falling to their
airbase or airport, or just the Kabul airport, is not successful.
Right.
That's not a success. And Politico had a headline this week that it's worth noting. A new one in the Republicans pounce genre.
Oh, boy.
Republicans fixate on messy Afghanistan withdrawal. That's what they call asking.
Fixated.
Oh, fixated.
Why don't you just let it go?
Asking questions of General Mark Milley, who was in charge of this withdrawal, is called fixating. Messy is such an interesting euphemism for the death of 13 troops.
Yeah.
The botched retaliation that killed a family of Afghans.
Yeah.
I believe 6 or 7 of them children.
Children.
Which no one ever answered for that either. And the deaths and probably torturing and terrible experiences of the interpreters who helped us and
our allies
who helped us and their families. The abandonment of not only people, but all of our arms and goods and money.
Billions
to the
of
Taliban.
Dollars of weaponry. Yeah.
But, you know, let's not fixate on it.
He also used the curious phrase about how some of the other Americans were able to escape and allies were escaped through, quote, various means.
Various means, yeah.
Look, the other people might have helped them, just not me.
I do love how liberals are always like, but to libertarians, they're like, but who will build the roads? Like, look, I think we can handle building the roads. In fact, we have civilians and people not in government handling getting people out of very tight spots in overseas war theaters where it's actually the government's job to do stuff. Meanwhile, liberals are like, I don't know. Could we do pre-K without the government? I don't think so.
Oh, they use this all the time. Yeah.
I don't think so.
They say that all the time.
I think we could handle it. Maybe you guys should handle this part and we'll handle the pre-K.
Yeah.
Just a thought. Okay. Another ruling from SCOTUS. I'll just run through this one real quick. There's a little bit of confusion about it. And it is
a lot of confusion. Yeah.
Confusing. And also shout out to Amy Howe at SCOTUS blog, who I always read to get the backstory on these things, because I feel like it can get very caught up in the day-to-day and the splashy quote of the moment when it comes to SCOTUS and you don't understand how it got there.
Right.
So I'm going to attempt
to
explain this. There's a Texas law known as SB4 that should have gone into effect March 5th, which would make it a crime for non-citizens to enter Texas illegally and would allow state court judges to order non-citizens who entered the country illegally to return to Mexico. The federal government and some immigrants' rights groups sued Texas and said, no, you can't do that. In February, a U.S. district judge barred Texas from enforcing this law. Then the Fifth Circuit said, no, that's on hold. Mm-hmm. They can do this until we work it out. It is supposed to be fast-tracked until April in the same Fifth Circuit to discuss the merits of this case and figure out what they can and cannot do. Texas argues that this is not a violation of federal law and doesn't step on the Fed's toes because it's merely a mirroring of federal law and it empowers them to do what the federal government should already be doing.
Right.
The Feds say, no, this is our province. You can't do this. Anyway, it goes to SCOTUS. And SCOTUS, I think just basically on procedural grounds, says the Fifth Circuit's decision on this, allowing Texas in the meantime to do this, can stand until the Fifth Circuit works this out.
That's right.
Do I have that right?
You did it. It's temporary, and and so you have justices like Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh sounding more hopeful that this is what they hope and expect
right.
will happen. That was a 6-3 ruling, however, the conservatives.
Yes. So
generally, broadly speaking.
Just again, this is Amy Howell reporting. Justice Sonia Sotomayor dissented from the court's decision to deny the Biden administration's request, which the Biden administration was requesting that you not allow Texas to do this at all.
Right.
Joined by Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, she complained that with Tuesday's order, the Supreme Court gave a green light to a law that will upend the longstanding federal state balance of power and sow chaos when the only court to consider the law concluded that it is likely unconstitutional. And then Elena Kagan, somewhat less fiery, more procedural, wrote that she would not allow SB 4 to go into effect because the subject of immigration generally and the entry and removal of non-citizens particularly are matters long thought the special province of the federal government.
Right.
To which I say, like, you really got Texas in a pickle if that's the case, because you're not enforcing the law.
That's the problem for Texas. The way they see this is the federal government's dereliction of duty, because they have a massive border crisis going on. People are just pouring in. And they're like, if they're not going to, what do you want us to do about this? Just take everybody in and just keep everybody. Certainly don't send them to Martha's Vineyard. Right? Just keep everybody within your state.
You're not,
all these little towns,
the border,
like Brownsville.
As I've said before,
you know,
the border they want to recognize is the one at the north of Texas.
Yeah.
Don't send anyone out of Texas.
That's correct. And the other problem with this situation is Mexico has said that I think they are not going to be inclined to take back.
Right.
Anybody who Texas turns away, because they're not dealing with a state, they're dealing with a federal government.
Sure, seems like that Remain in Mexico executive action maybe could have stayed in place, and then it would have been a little.
Well, the president has done everything he could, as you know. He can't do anything more than that.
I feel like he could reinstate that in just a second.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's what's going on with that. We will provide updates as needed, but since that was. It was like a big story, but people seemed confused about it. So I was attempting to get my brain.
Everybody's confused. I mean, everyone down there is confused about it.
I mean, nobody knows what to do. The whole thing is, speaking of sowing chaos, we've been sowing chaos for about 3 years now down at the border. So I guess now we are reaping. Okay. Can we talk about this story in the New York Times? I'm just going to throw this one
All right.
Yes, this is the one. So. This is the part of the show where I throw things at Vic that I didn't tell him we were talking about.
I'm ready.
Loves it.
Okay, here we go.
Actually, look, I'm not throwing anything hard at you.
Let me take a swig of my coffee first so I can be more alert.
This is like a T-ball pitch, okay? It's good. The headline in the New York Times, can climate cafes help ease the anxiety of planetary crisis? Okay. I'm just going to read, perhaps in an extended way from this.
Here?
In a small room in Lower Manhattan, a group of 8 New Yorkers sat in a circle sharing kombucha and their climate fears against the background of pattering rain and wailing sirens. In Champaign, Illinois, a psychotherapist facilitating a meeting for other therapists held up a branch of goldenrod, asking the half dozen participants online to consider their connection to nature. And in Kansas City, Missouri, a nonprofit that runs a weekly discussion on Zoom began its session with a spiritual reading and a guided meditation before breaking into groups to discuss topics like the ethics of childbearing amid a fast-rising global population and concerns of resource scarcity. So far we have just a Portlandia sketch.
Yeah.
We're going to move on. All were examples of a new grassroots movement called climate cafes. These in-person and online groups are places for people to discuss their grief, fears, anxiety, and other emotions about climate crisis. They are springing up in cities across the United States, including Los Angeles, Seattle, and Boston, and around the world. It isn't clear how many exist, but Rebecca Nestor of the Climate Psychology Alliance, I'm sure that's filled with a lot of people with very healthy mental situations.
Yeah.
Mental health situations. A nonprofit that trains facilitators said the number of cafes has greatly increased in the past 3 years. The alliance examines how mental health is affected by ecosystems, extreme weather and disasters, tainted air and water, and how that intersects with other forces like racism and income inequality. Psychologists say that such groups help people face the unsettling realities of the climate crisis. By the way, can I leave it to urban liberals to make the least consequential conversation you can have talking about the weather into this?
Right.
Like you should. Like,
no, you get it
enough
used to
out
be,
there for you.
Yeah.
That's the whole conversation.
It used to be that, you know, the weather is the easiest conversation to bring up, not politics or religion.
No, we got
to
take that from you, too.
No, because this is climate anxiety.
You got to have a struggle session over the weather. Yeah. Ms. Nestor first hosted a climate cafe in Oxford in Britain in 2018. She said the idea was modeled after the death cafe, a concept created by a Swiss sociologist through which people gather to talk openly about death in order to better appreciate their lives. Many of the climate.
This sounds like a It sounds like both grief counseling.
Both of these sound like a blast. But I will say that talking about mortality in order to help you appreciate your life is a redemption narrative, whereas this one is talking about anxiety for the sake of anxiety, because they don't think there's this doesn't make you appreciate your life more. Right. That's not the object.
Right.
Many of them are free and open to the public. Good news for us, Vic. But some are specifically for professionals in the areas of librarians, therapists, and other professionals. So make sure you steer clear of those groups that are involved in this.
Well, I'll say this, Mary Catherine. Uh-huh. If they're sitting around eating their quinoa bowls, quinoa kale bowls, and drinking kombucha, they're not going to be sitting around for long. Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Jennifer, yes, you get it? Okay, good.
That's a fast trip.
The second thing
An incoming front, as they might say in the weather.
It's blown in and out and out. When you describe this, these places where people are getting together, I the first thing I thought was, oh, you mean they're all meeting at the Rainforest Cafe? Do you remember?
I remember the Rainforest.
Yes, I do. Are they gone now? It was like the climate-ish version. Excuse me, of climate version. What am I talking about here?
I mean,
climate-ish version of the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah,
it was like the same theme.
I remember.
Huge.
And didn't it have a soundtrack? There was like an ambient soundtrack, like.
Yeah, I was going to say. Oh. Yeah, exactly. You're walking.
That's
through
probably offensive,
jungle.
By the way. Are those accurate rainforest noises? No, I do not know.
It's offensive to the animals in the rainforest. And they had, you know, plastic animatronic kind of animals. Sometimes, yeah. like
and you could buy
alligator.
Expensive trinkets there that allegedly went to saving.
Oh, really?
The world, I think.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I can't believe that place failed. What all these places need is a sort of a fact checker sit among them. If you can just duplicate Bjorn Lomborg. And just put them in every one of these circles.
I do not
actually,
think that would help them.
It's not actually as bad as you think. Actually, this is the cleanest. You know, we've had the lowest number of amount of emissions since X. You know, things like that. The idea, for example, connected tangential to this climate anxiety is the rapidly rising population.
Right.
You know,
except our birth rates are.
Yeah, you know, the birth rates are way down. I mean, we're going to make this turn. Trust me, it's not good in the other direction.
No, it's actually very sad. I've heard from people on Twitter who, and you'll see stories written about them sometimes, of people who listened to the population bomb nonsense.
Sure.
And then did not get married and have children.
Right.
And that's a really sad thing. To do to people.
Yeah.
So I would say you should not, and that these little gatherings of people will not get happier by virtue of that. I'll talk a little bit about what they're talking about. The attendees over the course of an hour described worrying for their future children and future generations more broadly. They described feeling overwhelmed, not only by climate change, but also by the political climate. They described oscillating between feeling hopeless and empowered about the planet's future. At times, long pauses punctuated the comments as the attendees took in what had been said, staring simply at each other or into their laps. And then someone says, I can't buy into the narrative anymore that there's no choice in how this ends and that major corporations have complete control over my future. They do not have total control, and I refuse to cede that. Look, first of all, I don't think you're going to find your solution to any of this from the government making a corporation do something, as if it's not already doing that, by the way. Look at the electric car nonsense. But I would suggest that it's healthy to think that you might have control in a situation.
Right.
You should embrace that feeling. And maybe not use it to go to the climate cafe. We're a bunch of people who have no internal locus of control and feel they have no agency in their lives are all sitting around talking about their anxiety, making it worse for them.
This is like
on caffeine.
You know what it reminds me of? That wonderful scene in Jerry Maguire where Bonnie Hunt, the sister of Renee Zellweger's sister, played by Bonnie Hunt, she has all her divorcee friends sitting around together, and they're all commiserating about men and this whole thing. It's like this. They're sitting around, except for they're talking about climate.
Yes.
You know?
Well, and this is one of the things, I think this is part of the thesis of Abigail Schreier's book, Bad Therapy.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe Jonathan Haidt has a new one coming out that's called The Anxious Generation, something along those lines.
That's right.
Where actually talking about this incessantly and surrounding yourself with people who are talking about this kind of your emotions incessantly, no matter what the anxiety is coming from, actually doesn't help you.
Right.
And like a little stoicism would really do you good.
Yeah.
It would really do you good.
I also recommend church.
It's another idea.
All right. Or synagogue, whatever.
Get your matching clothes on and go to a service.
go to, you okay? know, Because again, it's a real crisis that people are facing, and it's their own sort of in their life. What are they doing? Looking for purpose. Our pastor was just talking about the phenomenon of, it's called destination anxiety or something like that, where you constantly are like, if I only get this thing, if I go to this one thing and get to this place, I'll be happy. Well, once you attain that, you're never happy. And then it's like the next thing, on to the next thing. It's just, you know.
One more quote. I find myself struggling to enjoy the outdoors because of the constant reminders of environmental degradation. What's happened here is that these people desperately need to touch grass, mm-hmm. as the internet says. Yeah. And this specific anxiety that they are cultivating is preventing them from touching grass.
Yeah.
It's so bad for you. Don't do this.
I feel like, though, every generation, and we go through this every decade, really, where people feel like it's the end of the world now, and they sit around, they talk about this. I remember a classmate of mine telling me she didn't want to have kids because to grow up in this awful world that we live in, called 1994.
Oh, geez.
You know, I mean,
girl, that was a good time.
If you think it was bad then in the United States, man.
Rugby shirts galore. Was a good time. No. I think it's sad that people feel this catastrophic about it. Yeah. And I don't think they're doing themselves any favors like this. And I hope that they find a way out of it. Look, I have my concerns as well, right? I have my concerns about the world, about the state of the world. Mm-hmm. And yet to get up and put one foot in front of the other, raise your kids, if you have them, the best way you know how, go to church. Mm-hmm. Don't even need the matching clothes. Mm-hmm. I just do it for a special occasion and try to put one foot in front of the other, guys.
That's it. And also stock up on canned goods. You got to dig a hole and get your go bag ready and make sure you're getting away from the EMPs.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. It's simple.
Other than that, and learn how to raise chickens and a lot of guns. Okay.
Read up on the local flora and fauna so you can eat it in the event.
I mean,
that civilization collapses.
We're only half kidding.
But other than that,
yeah,
happy-go-lucky over here.
See, we told you everything's fine.
We should do a prepper cafe.
Oh man, yeah.
It's at the shooting.
I'm not even gonna say. There's so many things I can say, and I'm not even gonna say.
Happens at the shooting range. That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna eat MREs and shoot stuff. Okay. You'll feel better when you're done. All right. Speaking of being unsettled.
Yes.
Do we need to talk about the Kate Middleton story again?
All right.
Okay.
We want to give...
We
had an update last.
Yeah.
I know, listeners, I just cut her off again. I just realized that. I just did it. But I'm now going to say, Mary Catherine, what did I just cut you off from saying? So.
Oh, I don't even know.
I get blamed for both now. Thank you.
It wasn't important.
Nice going, Vic. Yeah.
It wasn't important. Okay. So we did our first story on this when things were still relatively calm in this arena.
Yeah.
But Kate Middleton,
a little Photoshop,
has been was out of sight from mid-December mid-December until just this week. And just this week, with rumors swirling after the Photoshopped Instagram photo that we talked about,
I would call it a touch-up.
Pretty heavy. People were highly suspicious. I think that the crown would have been fine if they had just said, look, she's coming out at Easter.
Right.
Calm down. Right? Mm-hmm. Don't do the Photoshop photo. Right. I don't know why someone decided to do that. Unless there's really something going on. Anyway, so that's what's driving people to look for all these other explanations. Is there a divorce in the offing? Is there is there some sort of sickness that needs long-term mm-hmm. treatment? Is there a mental health issue? All these things are happening on the internets. Yes. Frankly, the Americans are, I think, more energized about this than the Brits. The Brits are like mildly interested, and we are like super in.
Because we want royalty.
Let me tell you, we also don't have to bear the price of it, right?
Yeah.
They pay for it. It's just entertainment for us.
That's true. They.
I think that almost literally every group chat of women in this country mm-hmm. about 2 weeks ago turned into a Kate Middleton chat. I was just waiting for the moment on every group chat I'm on where it became that, where the dam burst and everyone went, oh my gosh, I have thoughts. And we all jumped in. So that being said, this week there were some photos released.
Yeah, video no less.
And video from a little farmer's market that's near their home. Wills and Kate ventured out.
Oh yeah, it looked lovely.
Yeah, seemingly putting to rest any rumors that she is unwell.
Right.
Or that this relationship isn't working. or that there's a rumored affair with Lady Rose. All of
Lady
that.
Lady Rose?
Lady Rose Chumley. Is that right?
Oh, is that
yes. It's said. It's spelled very differently than that. You know how the Brits
I thought
are.
It was a Cousin Rose from Downton Abbey.
No.
Okay.
Not as cute. So Cousin Rose was
a
looker.
Her. Yes.
A looker. Okay. Great. So they get their picture snapped at this outing by random dude, allegedly. Not paparazzi. Now, the Crown has all sorts of agreements about how such photos and videos are released. I don't know how this went down. The press originally reported that she had seen out and about, but printed no pictures. But then The Sun and TMZ, I think, got their hands on this fairly blurry video and picture of Kate and Wills walking through this farmer's market. And immediately the internet said, that doesn't look like her.
Well, is everybody on board with this theory that that wasn't her?
Well, they say she's too tall. They say
she could have been wearing heels.
They say, no, she was not. You could tell she's wearing... It's like she's wearing a tracksuit. They say she's too tall. They say she walks differently than Kate Middleton. Frankly, I thought her face looked a little different, but that could be explained with other things.
I see Jennifer.
Her smile was the same as Kate's.
Yes.
That was legit.
They trained her well.
And so everyone says, did I mention that they said she didn't walk that way?
Yes.
Yeah. And so everyone says, it must be a body double. Because we're so far down the rabbit hole at this point. Nobody, and by the way, just a comms point, this is what happens when you mess with people, is then they don't believe you anymore.
Oh, right. There's nothing you can do about it.
They don't believe you.
No, you can't convince them if they...
It is worth noting that some of the royals, at least, I don't think it's confirmed, but some of the royals, there is one confirmed royal who had a stand-in. Queen Elizabeth II had a stand-in. Ella Slack acted as the late monarch stand-in, but only in very specific situations. Pensioner Slack didn't particularly resemble the former queen, but was chosen as her double as she is of a similar height and build. That allowed her to take Elizabeth's place during rehearsals for major events, which the monarch wasn't always able to attend due to her busy schedule. So there is some evidence that the royals have doubles.
They've done this before. This is, you know what, I hate to bring this up. Mm-hmm. I hate to bring this up. It pains me, but it reminds me of this awful movie called The Phantom Menace, in which Natalie Portman's character, not that I've watched it more than like twice, Queen Amidala.
Right.
She had a double.
Mm-hmm.
And then the double was killed in an ambush. Great trivia question for our listeners and for you. So Natalie Portman plays Queen Amidala.
Right.
Who plays her double? This is wild. What actress plays the double?
I think I knew this.
So it would be somebody
point.
Who would basically, you would think, try to look like Natalie
and it
Portman.
Was someone of my generation, because that's about the age of Natalie Portman. Yes. I feel like I knew this in the past, but I don't know it anymore.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Keira Knightley.
Oh, that's right. I have read about that.
Shockingly, she never brags about being in The Phantom Menace. Keira Knightley.
Number one on her IMDb.
I will also, known for, that would be the worst. If you go to IMDb, known for The Phantom Menace. Also, I saw the video and the analysis, the video analysis of her.
Right.
One, the analysis reminds me of the Patterson footage of Bigfoot from like the early 70s where they do a slow-mo of her walking and then like the freeze frame and it is kind of chilling. Two.
Chilling.
Chilling. Because I'll say this right now, on air, I kind of thought the same thing, that her face looked a little different. I'm just saying, maybe she lost weight.
Well, and that's part of it, right? She's been sick, so she could be just thinner because she's been recovering.
What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's likely that she had some sort of surgery that really did require a long runway.
Fine.
And if they had just kept their mouths shut and said, hey, she'll be back at Easter and not posted anything.
Right.
Let the internet have rumors without giving them fodder for the rumors, right?
And it might not even be plastic surgery per se.
No,
it
could
have been something very personal that you'd rather, you don't want to tell everybody. You know, like, oh, like me, like, oh, I had my procedure, you know, whatever.
Exactly. They're like, maybe it's something.
Not everybody wants to brag about
it. It's something a little embarrassing that she doesn't want brought to light.
Right. We don't need to know.
I do think she they're not wrong that she looks different in this video. I think my dad is in the Kate Middleton body double camp. So I'll look forward to discussing this with him at Easter.
Okay. That's my first question was, what do you think? And the second question is, why are we so obsessed with her? Is it because she's beautiful? Because I do think she's beautiful.
She is beautiful. Also, I would say that the actual sickness, which I do believe there's an actual sickness here. I don't think they're making that up. But I think it could be combined with marital problems. Because one of the things that people speculate on is that she's staying out of the public eye to make the Crown, understand this is what life looks like without me. You need to treat me right in order to keep me in the fold. And we know from old The Crown seasons, mm-hmm. this is how things work over there at the firm.
They can use the press.
Right.
It's a two-edged sword.
And maybe they're trying to punish her too. So it's like two houses warring using the press on different, anyway, it's all very interesting.
And I first learned of these unfortunate rumors of Prince William's supposed dalliances.
I didn't want to believe it, but it's been persistent.
You know who told me? A cabbie.
Kate, your
wife? No. She was there with me, though, when we heard it from our cab driver out in the Cotswolds.
Ah.
She said, oh, everybody knows it. She said, everybody knows that he's sleeping around. We all love Kate, though. We all love Kate.
I mean. Yes.
What was with her accent? It was very strange, the cab driver's accent. She was kind of, it was muddled. Okay, that's my first thing.
I wish her the best, and I hope to see her reemerge resplendent Easter.
I am again reminded, and I made a joke about this on the last episode, about the rumors in the late 60s about Paul McCartney being dead.
Yeah.
And I explained, you know, because I had just gotten the new Giles Martin new pressing of Abbey Road, and it's so good. And on vinyl, and I was explaining the cover to my daughter. She's a real Swiftie.
Gotcha.
She got such a, because she talks about Taylor Swift giving all sorts of numbers and things or whatever. And colors. And I explained about on Abbey Road how, you know, the four guys walking across the street.
Right.
And Paul is barefoot, and in Eastern cultures, you know, barefoot. John is in white, the symbol of death in Eastern cultures, supposedly. Ringo is wearing a suit. He's the pallbearer. And then George Harrison's in denim because he's the gravedigger.
There you go.
The license plate of the Volkswagen said 28IF, as in 28 if Paul were alive.
I mean, I think it's all very clear.
And you're not going to believe this. They actually did at the time a voice analysis, and some experts said, and it is clear that the voice you hear now is not Paul McCartney.
Isn't there some part of the record, if you play it backwards, it sounds like Paul is dead?
Yes, that is on Sergeant Pepper. No, that is on Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh, I thought it was Sergeant Pepper.
It's on Magical Mystery Tour, and it's at the end of Strawberry Fields Forever.
Okay.
And it sounds like that, or it also sounds like cranberry sauce. But at the end of Sergeant Pepper's,
could go either way.
You go on; it goes on for a stretch for like almost a minute, I think, and then all of a sudden they replay some stuff backwards. It's wild, especially when you're on acid. It's really wild.
Get out your vinyl. I did not address your question about why it's fascinating.
Oh, yes.
I will say I'm not sure. I mean, a missing princess is fascinating, but
a missing princess.
That's just an interesting story, and they've left this vacuum that allows people to speculate in this way. But I would say, as a child, I didn't understand why so many people were obsessed with Diana. I was like, why do we care about this? This doesn't make any sense. And I remember people being so emotional when she died. Not that I thought it was tragic.
Particularly, she was no longer.
Right. Yeah, but now that I am this age, which is the same age as Will and Kate and Harry, I realize, I watched them all grow up. I grew up with them. Yeah. I watched them get married. Yeah. I watched her have kids. It happened at the same time as me. So you feel this
connection
to watching these folks grow up. And I was rooting for them, particularly for Kate and Wills. I don't know. Harry and Meghan went sideways pretty quickly.
Yeah, both of them.
But I was rooting for them, and I continue to root for them. And I think that has something to do with it, because I was not a royal watcher until this generation.
Yes.
It's my generation. So that's
why
here I am. Let me make one more note.
Plus, she's beautiful.
Yes, that too. One more note, which is that I have a piece in my Substack about ignoring your children and why it's good for them and how to do it well. So check that out. It's based partly, or it references Family Unfriendly, which I'll get Tim to talk about.
Yes, again, Family Unfriendly, we just reviewed it in the Weekend Beacon. It was Naomi Schaefer-Riley.
Nice.
Who reviewed it. And the travel team stuff is crazy because just a different world now, where you're weekends, and we're just driving down to
Charlotte.
A friend of mine who live in they live in Boston, and it's like, we're gonna be down in your area, Virginia, driving down for a soccer game.
I can't do it, R.I.P. my kids' sports.
No, it's a different
dreams.
And you can't. It's very hard to get in now because everybody's on these. You got to start at age like 4 or 3, and then pay. And the money that it. Anyway, it'll be a great talk.
Yes.
A really quick shout out to listener Felipe Barreto, who sent the tip our way about my sciatica. So I just want to say thank you for your concern.
Nice.
I do try to remember and stretch in the morning and the night and he recommended Pilates. I haven't gotten into that yet. I'm doing power press.
Love it.
As you know, I'm in the middle of the revving up stage. But anyway, thank you for your concern, and thank you for listening. That wraps up this episode of Getting Hammered. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. You can follow me on Twitter at Victorino Mattis.
I'm at MK Hammer on Twitter, at MK Hammer Time on Instagram. You can follow the show at Getting Hammered Podcast on Instagram and YouTube, and you should. One last shout out to Winchester, who is the son of Frank Fleming, who works at Daily Wire.
Oh, yeah.
On this Down Syndrome Day. You will see joyful, I think, daily photos of Winchester at Frank's Twitter account, at IMAO _. If you want to check that out, it will bring you joy as you watch him grow up. He's quite the card. Thank you for getting hammered responsibly. And, oh, I should say, and also Sarah Fleming, who is not on Twitter as much, but I shout out Mom. I don't want to leave her out. Thanks for getting hammered responsibly. This has been a Nebulous Media Podcast.